From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the fall of 1997 in Minneapolis. The Minneapolis Public School District decided to make a significant change. School start times moved from 7:20 to 8:40 in the morning. Yes, that meant later departures and some shuffling of sports and extracurricular activities. But school leaders joined the medical community in Minneapolis in saying that students needed the change. They said kids were coming to school without adequate sleep, and it was impacting everything, their concentration, their performance, their health. Well, the results in Minneapolis have been remarkable. Research indicates that since the change in start time, test scores have improved in every subject. Standardized test scores have risen. Attendance is up. Tardiness is down. And now the American Academy of Pediatrics is calling for a line in the sand on starting school. For middle and high school, they want school to start no earlier than 8:30. It's kind of the first hard line on a school time, and it's sparking conversation locally and across the country. Now, coming up, we're going to hear from a researcher at the University of Minnesota who's tracked the results there. But first, we're joined by Dr. Heidi Connolly, who is the chief of the Division of Pediatric Sleep Medicine at Golisano Children's Hospital. Dr. Connolly, thanks for being here.
Pleased to join you.
All right. First of all, on the wider, broad-ranging issue of school start times and sleep, we have a lot of listener feedback already on our social media sites. We'll get to some of their comments as well. I know parents have a lot to say about this. And if our listeners want to join the conversation, they can. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Even if you're a college student, we'd love to hear from you about whether you can get out of bed for a 7 o'clock class. I don't even know if they start classes at 7 o'clock anymore.
Remarkably, the colleges have done a much better job of figuring this out
than
the high schools have, because most colleges have an occasional 8 a.m. school start time or, you know, class start time.
Right.
But most of them don't really start classes until 9 in the morning.
And so you say doing a better job. That, to me, says you've got a wholehearted endorsement of the AAP position on this, yes?
Oh, absolutely. This is a position statement that has been a long time in coming. As you already noticed, you know, 1997 was the initial data that came out of Minnesota. And there's been many other published studies as different school districts have changed their school start times, all of them showing substantial benefit with relatively little difficulty in actually implementing this. So my opinion is that the perceived difficulty in implementing a later school start time for high school students is worse than the actual doing of it. And so when you actually get down to the brass tacks of making that change, it's not that hard.
We're going to be hearing from a local retired superintendent a little bit later in this hour to talk about some of the conversations that do happen sort of behind closed doors when it comes to busing and other issues and sports. Certainly Section 5 is a big part of the conversation, extracurriculars, et cetera. But again, Dr. Connolly saying it seems like a big mountain to climb, but when you prioritize kids' health and you just say you're going to make the change, I guess you figure out how to do it. You find
That's
a way.
Absolutely right. I mean, the reason we're sending high school students to school is so that they can learn and be productive academically. And we have tons of data that says that if you start school later, you're a better learner and you retain more of that information. And that goes along with our basic understanding of sleep physiology, that you move most of your memories from short-term to long-term memory during REM sleep. And REM sleep happens only after you've been asleep for a long time. So if you deprive yourself of sleep, you're preferentially depriving yourself of REM sleep, and then that impairs your ability to retain information long-term.
Peter and Penyan and some others who are already waiting to join the conversation, we're going to get to you in just a moment, but let's at least make sure that we explore that a little bit more deeply here. So REM sleep takes usually how long to get into for the average, even for the average teenager?
Between an hour and 2 hours, but then each sleep cycle, as the night goes on, becomes longer periods of REM sleep. So you preferentially, all, you know, young adults do, and even adults, but the majority of your REM sleep happens in the later portion of the night. So if you're always waking up earlier than you're ready to be woken up, you're preferentially missing REM sleep compared to the other stages of sleep.
Is that also why, while napping may help, napping isn't always a solution in terms of overall numbers of hours slept in a day, because that could be sleeping without REM sleep?
Correct. So most of us don't enter REM sleep during nap periods. Indeed, if you do, that's kind of pathologic. or you're really profoundly sleep deprived. The way we all fall asleep is we enter sleep through kind of light sleep, and then we get deeper asleep. The initial portions of an overnight period of sleep in the beginning is more of this slow wave or deep sleep where it's really hard to wake people up from it. You feel real groggy when you get up. And then as the night progresses, you get longer and longer periods of REM or dreaming sleep. And that's actually the stage of sleep where people move things from short-term to long-term memory, and that helps with retention of information in an academic setting.
Now, before we get to the phones, one more quick question on this. So the American Academy of Pediatrics is coming out and saying 8:30 in the morning for middle and high school is the earliest it should be. And that's, like you say, that's been a long time coming. That's a powerful statement from a large organization of respected people in the medical community. But it ultimately is my understanding, and forgive me here, Dr. Connolly, my understanding is it's got to be made on a district-by-district basis, and it's really going to be up to them to decide what each district can handle. Is that right?
That's correct. And, you know, this isn't a trivial decision to make, because the way, certainly locally, all of the school districts work is that they, you know, bus one group of kids to, for example, elementary school, and then they turn around and use the same bus again for middle school, and then they turn around and use the same bus again for high school. That would be the recommended and ideal situation, so that high school students are starting latest and would therefore be ending latest. What's currently happening in many of the school districts, I mean, some of our local school districts start as early as 7 or 7:20. They pick up the high school students first and then progress on to get the elementary school students later. In a northern climate like ours, there's issues of kids standing waiting for the bus in the dark, and there's a preference to have that be older versus younger children. It also impacts what happens on the reverse end when school ends, because many families use the presence of older high school age siblings to meet the bus and get younger siblings off the bus while parents are still at work.
A lot of different angles to hit here, and I've got a lot of different questions. Your feedback, which has already been coming in via social media, is going to help move this conversation in a lot of different directions. But let's take our first call. This is Peter in Penn Yan. Peter, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me. Ben Franklin said that early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. And I guess I've kind of run into the same thing in my life. Through high school, I had to be there at 7:30, but college kind of hardwired me to get up later. And, of course, during the summers, I always got up later. And now that I'm in the workforce, I'm kind of finding that this hardwiring to get started later is a real disadvantage. And I'm afraid that if we alter our school system so that we're starting later, we're going to be disadvantaging the next generation.
Peter, thanks for the call, Peter. I appreciate that. Dr. Connolly, what do you think?
So teenagers are actually biologically programmed to have a longer circadian rhythm, the thing that determines that, you know, we feel hungry at about the same time every day, we feel sleepy at about the same time every night. Adults have a circadian rhythm that approximates 24 hours. Adolescents have a circadian rhythm that is longer than that. So they find it very difficult biologically to fall asleep earlier, because you're most alert right before your usual bedtime, or that is one of the times when you're most alert. And so it's really very difficult for them to just shift to an earlier schedule. It's not just about being motivated to do it or being recalcitrant and unwilling
to
go to bed early.
Biologically, it's more difficult.
Correct. So Okay. They have a really hard time falling asleep earlier.
What about Peter's contention that maybe if we get kids used to, locked into this starting later, that hurts them when they become adults and they get used to starting later, and all of a sudden they can't, they transition poorly to a workforce?
Yeah, I don't think that's all that likely to happen, because our circadian rhythms shrink down in young adulthood back closer to 24 hours. So that problem really goes away once we leave the, you know, pubescent time period. So I think that's pretty unlikely to happen. There's also not good data showing that that actually happens. And, you know, presumably places like Minnesota, who've been doing this since 1997, the kids that were part of that original cohort are now young adults. And if we were really noticing a significant difference in that way, you'd think we'd be hearing about it.
Yeah, and here's Joe on our Facebook page sort of making a similar point. He says, if sleep is the issue, then an easier solution is for parents to get kids in bed earlier. Of course, it seems these experts must be assuming that parents can't control a child's bedtime, so now the state and the government have to step in. That's the wrong way to do it. Again, he's making the point, look, you've got to be parents. Get your kids in bed earlier. That's the rule.
Right, and I guess what I'm trying to say is that even putting them to bed earlier isn't going to make them fall asleep earlier as adolescents because they're biologically programmed to stay awake later. That isn't true of younger children, and it isn't true of adults. It's unique to the adolescent time period.
As a parent of a young child, that is both elucidating and horrifying what you're telling me about that.
Well, and, you know,
but it does answer some questions.
Right. As a parent of a younger child, you know, they melt down 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and they're raring to go at 6 a.m. Adolescents, they're kind of the other way. They want to be 10, 11 o'clock at night and getting up at 7 or 8 in the morning, you know, on weekends, 10 or 11, if they had their preference.
Yeah. Before we get to, you mentioned Minneapolis. Before we get to a guest who can help tell us more about what's been going on there, let's grab another quick call. This is Gina in Brighton, who's been waiting to join the conversation. Go ahead, Gina.
Hi. I am a Brighton parent of three boys who are all in middle school now. And I think this is a terrific idea to start school later. I know the Academy of Pediatrics has just come out with this recommendation, but this has been something that's been talked about for a while now by a lot of experts. It was mentioned in the film Race to Nowhere that these kids really need to get their sleep, and they're becoming unhealthy by waking up so early day after day and having to get to school. I know I have had to drag my three kids out of bed for the last week and a half since school started, and it's really tough. And I have, as a parent, been getting them to bed earlier. But the doctor's right. They don't fall asleep. They lay awake. So it's really aggravating as a parent because, you know, school districts, Brighton included, are always talking about how they care about our children, they want the best for our children, but when you talk to them about this, there, of course, is nothing they can do. And there's lots of school districts all over the country that have been doing this. It's not easy, but it's also not impossible.
Thanks for the call, Gina. You got a lot of nods here from Dr. Connolly, but Dr. Connolly, can you share with Gina and our audience, I mean, are you aware of local districts moving more in this direction, or are you part of those conversations? Will a district call you and want to talk about it?
Several years ago, one of the local school districts opened a new elementary school, and we were asked to come and talk to the PTA and the school board about moving those school start times for the high school kids to a later time because when they built the new elementary school, they had to rearrange all of the bus schedules to accommodate the new elementary school. And, you know, to our surprise, we thought the pushback was going to be from teachers who wanted to go home earlier, coaches who were worried about competitive sports, that kind of thing. Quickly, those people were very willing to see the data and agree that their job was educating our adolescents and providing them with an environment, including timing of the environment, that allowed them to learn better was to their advantage. And in the end, the pushback came from the parents' organization who was worried about not having older children available to meet younger children as they were getting off of the bus. And so the bus schedule was the henchpin in all of that. And in the end, that school district, unfortunately, did not move their school start times for high schoolers to a later time.
We're talking about the news that you might have seen recently with the American Academy of Pediatrics coming out and saying they want schools to start no earlier than 8:30, especially for middle and high school students. And that would be a big change for a lot of districts, but they're saying that this is a significant issue and that sleep deprivation and sleep deficit is an epidemic among American kids. It doesn't just lead to lack of performance in school and concentration. It could impact obesity, health, et cetera, long term. All of those things we're going to continue to touch on with Dr. Heidi Connolly in studio. She is the chief of the Division of Pediatric Sleep Medicine at Golisano Children's Hospital. And on the line with us right now is Kyla Wahlstrom, the director of the Center for Applied Research and Education Improvement at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Wahlstrom, thank you for taking the time.
Pleasure to be with you.
All right. So I tried to set up the hour with a little bit of a historical look from everything that I was able to find, but you can help us understand it better. My understanding was that in the mid to late 1990s, Minneapolis public schools went from an average start time around 7:20 to 8:40, and the results have been measured in many ways now, and there have been significant results. But make sure we've got some of the history correct there.
Yes, you are right about that. In fact, Minneapolis made the change in 1997, and the year prior in 1996, the Edina, Minnesota public schools were the first district in the nation to make the change based on the medical information that several school board members who were physicians had been at a physician's meeting hearing about the sleep changes, the sleep phase shift that's going on in teenagers. They brought it back to the school board, and the board at that time decided to make the change. So we collected data in 1996 in the Edina schools. We found phenomenal changes, and as a result, we were reporting those. Minneapolis then took that on, and they made the change in 1997, and they haven't looked back. They are thrilled with having had made that change.
And we also talked about exactly what you mean by changes and improvements, but give us some specifics.
Well, one of the things that is important when you're collecting educational data, you really do need a minimum of 3, preferably 5 years to really show findings. I mean, to make claims that something is making a difference after 1 year's worth of data is really very poor research and hollow conclusions. We then followed the Minneapolis students from 1997 to 2002. We found a statistically significant reduction in depression, increase in graduation rates, and so on. We didn't have the final answer on the grades earned at that time, and then I was given a CDC grant from the Centers for Disease Control in 2009, and then we went into three different states, to collect data on 9,000 students. And we found conclusively that it has a beneficial effect not only on grades earned and attendance, but it has great effects on positive. They're significantly less likely to use drugs, cigarettes, and alcohol as a result of having 8 or more hours of sleep every school night.
And Dr. Heidi Connolly in studio was telling us that in many ways our body will sort of re-regulate as we become adults because our sleep rhythms change and evolve, and the sleep necessity and natural circadian rhythm of a 15, 16, 17-year-old is not the same as someone who's 20, 25, 30, 35. And one of our callers, Dr. Wallstrom, was concerned that if we get kids conditioned to starting the day later, they're going to be at a disadvantage when they hit the workforce because they're going to be asked to get up earlier and they may not be used to that. Dr. Connolly is saying there's sort of a natural resetting of the body, and is your research indicated that there's any concern about when kids become adults and they get, you know, penalized for getting used to starting later in the day?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, and we have not studied that directly about young adult outcomes as they are now in the workforce. But certainly what we know about sleep biorhythms in adults, as Dr. Connolly mentioned, once you hit adulthood and even young adulthood, your ability to self-regulate your when you go to bed, when you wake up, is totally within your control. I think the point that she was making, and this is exactly why this is such an important topic, is that the teenagers do not have control over when the melatonin secretion occurs, which is about 10:45 or 11. It's onset at that time, and it offsets about 8 in the morning. Now, we as adults can, once we get into a regular sleep-wake schedule, we can actually arrange when our melatonin secretion will occur just if our body gets into a routine. So adults have that ability to make those changes, and teenagers don't.
And before I let you go, Dr. Wallstrom, let us know now, is research ongoing? Is it sort of just accepted now in Minnesota and Minneapolis that this was the right move? And as a follow-up, if the data is so strong, why are we still a little bit slow to see other districts across the country following suit?
Well, to answer your first question, you know, certainly it's not just Minneapolis. There's been districts, more than 300 districts across the country have made the change. So it's it's a phenomenon that is grabs moving across the country. Now, to answer your other question about continued research, we certainly want to know more about this car crash data because that is a public health concern for everybody. Those tired kids run into you and me as much as they crash the cars for themselves. So that's a big factor as well. That's data we want to continue to look at. And frankly, you know, the reason that there's such resistance, if you will, or concern about changes, I was a school district administrator and a principal and a teacher for many years before I became a researcher. Schools are very complex organizations, and there's a lot of moving parts when you look at bus schedules, athletic schedules, the schedules for the ball fields and the swimming pools and the lunchroom line and all those things. So all of those things have to be taken into account when a district is making this decision. And it's an important decision that needs to be factually based. And now that we have the facts, I'm hoping that more districts will take that factual information to have a really informed discussion.
And real briefly on a follow-up there, because Dr. Connolly mentioned earlier, yes, districts have a lot of moving parts, sports, extracurriculars, et cetera, but her understanding is that you look at the districts that have done this, move school start times later, and they've adjusted. They found a way.
Absolutely right.
All the people saying, you know, you really can't do it have found that you can if you choose it.
Yes, and in fact, the transportation cost, which is often used as the reason not to, the districts that have done it most successfully have done it at zero cost. All they've done is shifted around or flipped their tiered busing schedules. So there's a lot of misconceptions out there that it can't be done for reasons X, Y, and Z, and we have shown that actually those can be addressed if you really think thoroughly about what can be done differently.
Kyla Wahlstrom is the director of the Center for Applied Research and Education Improvement at the University of Minnesota. Thanks for taking the time to join the conversation with us on Connections today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a very short break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to hear from Howard Mafucci, a retired superintendent here in Monroe County. He's going to join the conversation about his experience in terms of what districts have talked about and how often this comes up. We know you've got more questions on sleep needs. We've had some parents asking, you know, is there a typical sleep need difference for a 10, 12, 14, 16, 18-year-old? We'll ask Dr. Connolly about that. And more of your comments on the idea of moving school start times back. Again, the American Academy of Pediatrics says no earlier than 8:30. We continue that conversation next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, it's our primary election preview. We talk to Lieutenant Governor candidate Kathy Hochul. She defends her endorsement from the NRA while explaining why she also defends the SAFE Act. She talks about the role of the Lieutenant Governor, and she gives specific ideas about what her priorities would be in 2015. Then we'll talk to a panel of political reporters, including our Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt. All coming up next hour on Connections.
Continuing this week, The Little, Land Ho is a comic story of friendship set amid the haunting beauty of Iceland. Mitch, a retired surgeon who can't quite admit to being retired, recruits his reluctant pal Colin for a holiday abroad. Iceland's vast landscapes form a primordial Eden, the perfect backdrop for the friends' escapades. As Mitch exclaims when Colin's spirits dampen, "Don't get that Sunday afternoon attitude, good times are still a-comin'." See details at thelittle.org.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, joined in studio by Dr. Heidi Connolly, the chief of the Division of Pediatric Sleep Medicine at Golisano Children's Hospital. And on the line with us is Howard Mafucci, retired superintendent of East Rochester District, which, Howard, we have to say, if you were still at East Rochester, it'd be less complicated for your district because it's a walking district, but I still want to hear from you on this issue. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Very good. And I should say you also didn't just work in East Rochester. Your career was in a number of districts. Where did your career take you?
Yeah, I was a teacher in Pittsburgh, 7th and 8th grade social studies teacher for 14 years. I also coached varsity ice hockey and varsity football and went on to Gates Chiley as an assistant principal for 3 years, then East Rochester principal for 5, and finished up 14 years as superintendent of schools.
How often did the question of school start times come up?
Yeah, it came up very rarely. It was on the periphery of issues, but I think as time goes on and people are trying to find ways to help kids do better in school, this issue now is really timely. And I did a quick literature review this morning, and it's clearly an issue in a lot of places, and people are trying to address it. And based on some of the preliminary research that I've seen, it's probably time to look at this.
Howard, give me a sense for if you're a public school district and you want to try to follow what the American Academy of Pediatrics is saying, 8:30 or later school start times, what are the moving parts that you have to start thinking about? And give me a sense for, you know, how that conversation has to play out.
Well, and again, I think it's already been addressed a little bit based on some of the comments I heard earlier. Schools are very complex organizations, very bureaucratic. So I think the first thing you would do is look at the research. What does the research say? And then take that research, put it into the planning process of the school district, go to the various stakeholders in the district and come up with a variety of alternatives and plans, and then do what's best for each particular district. All districts are a little bit different, although I think that if there are exemplars out there, which I think there are in other parts of the country, then you would look at those as well and develop an implementation plan and make the changes based on the needs of the district. The only thing I would add to some of the complications would be union contracts. You'd have to check the contracts because many contracts have start times and end times that are contractual. So you'd have to deal with that issue. But, you know, I've always found that teachers' associations and unions want to do what's best for kids for the most part. So I think they would do what's in the best interest of children.
When it comes to athletics, and I don't want to minimize any other extracurriculars, Section 5 is probably the most complicated after-school activity, I would assume, Howard, because so much of that does involve busing and transportation. What do you expect Section 5 would have to say about the notion of later school start times, which essentially mandates later school end times?
Well, again, I think the section would provide its input based on what it believes would be in the best interest of student athletes. And, you know, I think that where there's a will, there's a way. And, you know, I think if the start time is in that 8:30 area, the impact might not be as great as people think. You know, especially with the advent of fields that can operate, you know, all day long with the you know, a lot of schools have the artificial turf fields now, so field availability wouldn't be an issue. Gym time in the winter can be problematic, but you know, I do think they would be actively engaged and again trying to do what's best for kids.
And here's Carrie on Twitter asking about what happens before school. I want to ask Howard this, and I want to get Dr. Connolly's take as well. Carrie is asking, if school starts at 8:30, she wants to know, essentially, does that mean extracurriculars are going to be at 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 7:30 in the morning, and does that negate the whole point of this? Howard, what do you think?
Well, and that in some ways occurs already. There are schools that bring students in for band or chorus or other types of extracurricular activities in the morning. You know, I remember my days as a hockey coach, because of ice time availability, there were times where we had to have practices at 5 in the morning. I'm not sure I would even consider that today, nor would I think it would be necessary with the advent of more and more hockey rinks. But, again, I think it's very important. The first thing that has to be done is go to the research. What does the research say? And then try to build a program around good, solid research. And if the research says that it's better for students to start school 8:30 or later, then I think you do that and you build in the rest of their program based on the ways the schools work.
Here's Shana on Twitter saying, my high school-age daughter is picked up for school at 6:10 in the morning. Angie says, our high school starts at 7 with 0 hour, and before school activities start at 6. I'm dreading this when my kids become that age. Dr. Connolly, if before school activities move to 6:30, 7, 7:30, does that negate the point of moving school start times?
Absolutely. The whole point is to have kids sleeping in. And the interesting part about the data is that if you, for example, take a school start time for high school students and you move it 30 minutes later, if you look at the aggregate amount of sleep that those students obtain, it's actually more than 30 minutes. It's on the order of about 45 minutes. So what that means is that they're still kind of going to bed and going to sleep at the same time, but they're more efficient at falling asleep. So they go to bed at the same time, they fall asleep easier and more quickly, so they actually gain the benefit of even more sleep by being required to arrive at school later. If you schedule other activities earlier, you've defeated the purpose of that. And so the goal would be to have all of those preschool activities be occurring after school instead of before school.
P Pete on Twitter says, getting students to bed earlier is great, unless they have football and drama club and an hour and a half of homework for three different classes. I'm not bitter or anything, is what Pete says. Howard, before I let you go, and again, we're talking to Howard Mafucci, a retired superintendent from East Rochester and worked in other districts as well. You keep talking about go to the research, and now that there is a growing body of research, and now that you have the American Academy of Pediatrics saying this is our official position, do you expect that this will be a change, that it's not going to happen tonight or tomorrow or next week, but would you be surprised if at least a district or two in Western New York in the next year, and then maybe a few in the next 5 years, start looking at these recommendations and making changes?
Yeah, I think so. And, because I didn't have a lot of time to look at what's really happening out in other places, you know, I did see enough that there are school districts tackling this. Fairfax County in Virginia, which is an exceedingly large district, their budget's $2.5 billion. They're working on a plan that works. And I do want to be clear about this, that boards of education set policy. And if this is a good idea and districts decide to do it, boards by policy can make sure that kids aren't in school doing extracurricular activities before 8:30. That's kind of an easy fix if it's in policy. So, I do expect to see the issue talked about more. And, again, there are so many issues coming at schools today that we can't forget the most important thing to do is go to the research, good research, and if it's good for kids, work out a plan to make it happen.
And Howard, forgive me, one more quick question based on a listener comment here on our Facebook page. I'll ask you and Dr. Connolly the same. It's sort of a history question. Stacy writes to us and says, I taught in a school that was about 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Extracurricular clubs met before school. Kids wake up when it's something that they've chosen. They'll get up. The kids were more engaged in class. The families liked it because it more closely resembled the parents' schedules. Another benefit to later start times is that kids have less unsupervised time after school. Another school I taught in, though, started at 7:20 and dismissed before 2. First hour was essentially a loss, plus that's a lot of hours in the afternoon before parents get home that kids are expected to entertain themselves. Early start times are left over from the agrarian calendar, which is not how most of America's teenagers are programmed anymore. They have night jobs. They don't even get home until 9 or 10 at night. Shifting the start time would be good for students. Howard, is your understanding, is that a pretty good description of the history, the agrarian calendar and school start times? Is there a connection there that you know of?
Yeah, and I would say that that's a great description of why change in schools is hard, because it's been never done that way. It's always been done this way. So making a change is very, very difficult. And, I think just look at the school year. We really have issues with expanding any school in the summertime because we've always had summer off. I do think it's one of the reasons why we don't make change easy. But, at some point you have to do what you have to do.
Howard, thanks for taking the time. I always enjoy having you on the program.
You bet. Have a good day.
That's Howard Mafucci, retired superintendent of East Rochester Schools. Dr. Heidi Connolly is the chief of the Division of Pediatric Sleep Medicine of Golisano Children's Hospital. She's in studio with us as we talk about these new recommendations from the American Academy of Pediatrics. They're calling for 8:30, no earlier, for school start times, citing data and the evidence that. Is it overstating it, Dr. Connolly, to say that sleep deficit is an epidemic for teenagers in this country?
Oh, I don't think so at all. I mean, there are very few teenagers that I see that are getting the recommended 8.5 to 9.5 hours of sleep. And what you routinely see in people that are chronically sleep deprived is that they start the week and get not enough sleep on Monday night, not enough sleep on Tuesday night. That progresses on during the week, and they get more and more tired. And then on the weekends, they go to bed maybe a little bit later, but really what they do is sleep in very, very late on Saturday and Sunday morning. And then come Sunday night, they have trouble falling asleep because they've just woken up a few hours ago. And then they start that next week already short on sleep because they weren't successful at falling asleep early enough in order to get the total recommended amount of sleep.
When you say recommended amounts of sleep, again, we've had those questions from listeners about different ages, different needs. What's sort of a broad sketch of what kids need?
Yeah, so it's a little bit hard to put hard and fast numbers to that. So that's why people often have this as a question. It's pretty clear. There's great data from Mary Karskadden's group out in Providence looking at if you just allow adolescents to sleep as much as they want and there's no environmental cues, those adolescents will on average sleep between 8.5 and 9.5 hours. That's longer than an adult who sleeps between 7.5 and 8 hours.
We hope.
We hope. And then, you know, infants, they sleep, you know, 18, 20 hours a day. So there's a clear decline in total sleep times from infancy to adolescence. The easiest ways to figure out if your own children are getting enough sleep, because there's a lot of child-to-child variability, is do they wake up spontaneously on their own each morning? So if you have to go in and really rouse them to wake them up, they're not getting enough sleep. On the other hand, if, you know, noise starts happening in the house because other people are moving around and Johnny's wide-eyed and bright and bushy-tailed, then he's getting enough sleep. The other way to tell is if you're not getting catch-up sleep on the weekends, then you're probably getting enough sleep during the week. So if your weekend wake-up times spontaneously approximate the times that you get up during the week, that's a pretty good indication that you're getting enough sleep.
Listeners, if you want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you, whether you're a parent, whether you think about your kids in school, especially working parents. You can join the conversation 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. It's toll-free, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And along those lines, you have, again, you have Stacy on Facebook telling us that as a teacher, she saw benefits to parents because late start times meant kids were not getting home at 2 and having to fill hours kind of on their own, etc. They were getting home closer to a parent's work schedule. But now Brian is saying this would be problematic with work schedules for 2 full-time working parents. I mean, every family is different, Dr. Connolly, but any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's probably easier to leave an adolescent at home to get themselves on the bus a little bit later than it certainly is to leave a young elementary school child home earlier, unsupervised by a parent. So I think, you know, most of the way we look at this is involving the bus schedule and recycling of buses because, you know, they get used to transport different groups of children in the same school district. So it certainly would be my preference as a parent to leave my teenager home for 30 minutes to get themselves on the bus than it would be to leave a 7-year-old to that task.
And again, I don't mean to be flippant when I say, you know, we'll figure it out. I mean, it could be complicated for many people. But Dr. Connolly has made the point this hour that in many ways, school districts have looked at later start times and been concerned that it wouldn't work for busing, transportation, money, sports, etc., and those that have done it have made it work. And I imagine parents are amazing. Parents would probably make it work, especially if they thought it was better for their kids anyway.
Absolutely. You know, and the data that comes from the Minneapolis group actually shows that there's not a fall off in participation in things like competitive athletic events or, you know, drama club, debate club, things like that. As more and more schools within a district or within a region commit to moving school start times later, everything just shifts accordingly, and those activities happen, and kids participate at the same level. Interestingly, teachers report better job satisfaction, teenagers report less symptoms of depression, and then the data that we talked about but haven't really fully explored is this data from Fairfax County, where they looked at 2 school districts that were contiguous with each other, so same kind of traffic patterns mm-hmm. in that, and they showed decreased rates of car accidents in the school district that started later compared to the school district that started earlier amongst adolescent drivers.
We look at, again, make-up sleep. You talk about the way kids on the weekend, they say, well, I'll make up for it on the weekend. I'm not sleeping all week, but, you know, I'll sleep on the weekend. Can your body really make up sleep?
No, really can't. I mean, it eventually does, but it takes a good solid 2 weeks to completely catch up on chronic sleep deprivation. So if you're trying to do that every weekend, it's not really very effective. You do catch up on some of it, but then it creates this Sunday night problem of can't fall asleep.
And when it comes to sleep deprivation, especially among teenagers, tell me about some of the links that concern you regarding obesity, other health problems down the line.
Right. So there's large amounts of very compelling data that shows that kids and adolescents who sleep less are more likely to be overweight and obese. It's also clear that having televisions in bedrooms is associated with less sleep and therefore associated with increased rates of obesity. So taking TVs out of bedrooms, having a real consistent bedtime routine and a pretty consistent schedule will help teenagers and even young kids get recommended total amounts of sleep.
Dana on Twitter wanted to know, can your guests talk about whether kids are overloaded with activity and should we gear back on some of their schedules in high school?
So I think you as a parent probably know whether or not your child is overloaded. Some kids need a lot of things going on to kind of feel like they're doing what they want to do. Some kids really can't thrive with that and need more downtime than, you know, their age-matched peers. Ways to know that is whether or not your child is stressed about getting there, stressed about, having enough time to finish all of the activities that are associated with each one of these things that they're committed to doing. If you find that bedtimes are getting pushed later because you just can't get everybody home and fed and schoolwork done, then maybe it's time to do a little less.
Is there a sense that parents feel the pressure, though, because kids seem to be doing more than ever? I mean, parents want kids to be healthy and get their sleep, but it's hard for some parents to say, you know, you can't do everything here. You can't do all this stuff.
Well, and sometimes the issue is that the parent wants kids to do more than that child actually wants to do. So sometimes the pressure is coming from the parent rather than coming from the child.
Did you know that these recommendations were coming? And again, I should say for our listeners, if you're just joining us, the American Academy of Pediatrics has come out, and I've been saying, is it fair to say, Dr. Connolly, they've kind of drawn a line on times, school start times. I mean, we've heard for years, hey, later would probably be better, but now we're seeing a number, an actual time, 8:30 in the morning. And did you know this was coming?
Well, I think all of us were a little surprised that they actually said 8:30. And I think that was done because everybody's definition of late and early can be, you know, a little bit different. I think they wanted to be clear that the data that is out there published in the peer-reviewed literature shows that start times after 8:30 are the most beneficial. So they really did pick a time for that.
Were you cheering when you saw that?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
I'm looking at a number of school start times around the area. You know, Avon Central Schools, 7:40, Geneseo, 7:35, Dansville, 7:45. Rochester's kind of got a range there. As I look here, there's, you know, a number that start somewhere in that 7 o'clock range. But, Dr. Connolly, we're hearing from parents online who want to remind us that if we see 7:35 for a school start time, that doesn't mean the kid's getting up at 7:15. Sometimes a school busing route takes a while. And sometimes just preparing the child to get up, get breakfast, and get ready and get out the door could mean, you know, 6 o'clock or earlier, realistically, right?
Definitely, particularly in rural school districts where rides can be very, very long. You know, that can impact kids a lot because they're spending a lot of sedentary time on the bus, you know, just trying to get to school. And there isn't really a very clear solution to that. The other place that that happens is in private and Catholic schools where, you know, for example, a bus will come and pick up kids in three or four different places, and then they all have to go and change at a central location to a second bus to be taken to their private or parochial school. And that just takes time.
Mike on Twitter is asking for clarification on the car accident. So if you just missed some of that, again, I'm not sure we have a huge body of evidence on decreased car accidents, but you touched on it a little bit. Give me a quick snapshot of what we're talking about when it comes to sleep and car accidents for kids.
So the study that was published came out of the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area. I think it was Fairfax County, Virginia, be precise. But they looked at two school districts. One had a later school start time than the contiguous school district, where, you know, traffic patterns were the same, the number of miles driven per car. You know, the National Transportation Safety Bureau keeps track of things like that. And what they found was that for the school district that had a later school start time, the rate of adolescent involvement in motor vehicle crashes, particularly right before school start and right after school release, was significantly reduced compared to the school district where school start times were earlier.
And Mike's comment was, kids are probably getting into car accidents because they're texting, not because they're tired. But again, what you're saying is they tried to, the main variable was start times?
Correct.
So I appreciate Mike's point on that. And certainly, look, we're all concerned about texting and driving in this car accidents. But if that's the variable and that's the difference, is that good enough for you? Is that enough for you, Dr. Connolly?
Well, clearly you'd like to see more data about that from different school districts and from other places because, you know, one study alone doesn't stand on its own. But certainly the data that was presented there was really quite compelling. And it fits with the physiology of what we know about sleep. When you're sleep deprived, the first things that tend to go away are reaction times, ability to make complex judgments with multiple pieces of input, that's driving, right? And then frontal lobe functioning like empathy and reasoning and being able to kind of think outside the box. Those are all the things that tend to go away first during periods of sleep deprivation. So driving is already challenging for teenagers because they're not particularly experienced. They make bad choices because of lack of experience and because of, you know, impulsivity and other things that are typical to adolescents, particularly males. If you talk to the insurers of the world, that's why it costs so much to insure teenage boy drivers. But, you know, any benefit that you can get out of that keeps our adolescents safer and keeps other people on the road safer.
We will hopefully continue this conversation on a future date with the folks from Section 5. And look, it's the second week of back to school. I understand a lot of school board superintendents are very busy. And so, you know, we're not exactly sure if local districts are going to respond immediately to this new recommendation. If they do, we'll certainly cover that for you. But as we start to wrap up the conversation with Dr. Heidi Connolly, who is the chief of the Division of Pediatric Sleep Medicine at Golisano Children's Hospital, here's Angela on Twitter saying, parents have to model behavior. Kids don't want to go to bed anyway, whether they're 2 or 16. And my feeling is that parents who don't sleep have kids who don't sleep. What do you think about that?
That's probably true. There's actually genetic predispositions to being a night owl or to being a morning lark.
Interesting.
And you can identify the genes that are associated with that, and you can draw family pedigrees of people who get up early versus stay up late. You know, so there probably is some truth to that.
Can you change that? If you sort of think that your family history indicates that you are a night owl but you want to be a morning person, are there certain things you can do to change that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, sleep, what we call sleep hygiene behaviors, behaviors around how you approach sleeping, will help you realign your biologic rhythm with what you socially want to do. So if you're desirous of getting up earlier in the morning and going to bed earlier at night, getting lots of morning light exposure, getting exercise during the daytime, engaging in at least 45 minutes or an hour of aerobic physical activity, and having a very ritualistic and consistent relaxing pre-bedtime routine where you avoid screen time, video, TV, computer in the hour or two before bed will help make all of that happen.
And let me kind of take the conversation in a direction that we've been focusing so much on teens, on middle and high school. And what about parents who are wondering about school start times or concerned about school start times for elementary school students?
So it's much less of an issue for elementary school students because their biologic rhythm is close to 24 hours. They naturally go to bed early in the evening and they are naturally awake early in the morning. The trouble for adolescents is they biologically cannot fall asleep earlier at night because their bodies are actually alert. And those hormones that make us feel sleepy, melatonin is the primary one. Adolescents don't start secreting melatonin until later at night compared to younger age children or compared to adults. So it's not just a matter of adolescents choosing to go to bed or not go to bed. It's a real biologic phenomenon.
Melissa says, my daughter is already drinking coffee at 16. I wish she weren't. She tells me it's the only way she can get going in the morning. Any concern about the sleep schedule for kids and teenagers? Do we have? I have no idea. Do we have more kids drinking coffee at earlier ages?
I think we actually don't know, but there is a real grassroots movement amongst the sleep community to make caffeine content be labeled in beverages and other things mm-hmm. that we consume. I think people in the general public assume that it's not there if it's not listed, but that is actually not true. It's not required to be listed. So some funny things that contain caffeine that you wouldn't think would be some orange sodas, not all of them, but some of them. Mountain Dew is a big container of caffeine. You know, and a small percentage of the population metabolizes caffeine very slowly. So morning consumption of substantial amounts of caffeine will be hanging out still late at night because their bodies just don't get rid of it.
I've cut down to a cup in the morning. If I have a cup in the afternoon, it really affects me. But for a while, it was hard. And I wouldn't want my son, when he's 15, 16, being sort of addicted to caffeine. I mean, it's a drug.
Absolutely. I mean, we use caffeine in the newborn intensive care units to remind children to breathe better. It's a potent pharmacologic agent that, you know, you have to treat with respect.
Last quick question. Do you think we're going to see change based on these new recommendations?
I'm always optimistic that the school districts will do what's right for children. And my belief is that the data is compelling and shows that the right thing is to have adolescents start school later.
When we posted the story that we were going to be having this discussion for our listeners, a remarkable amount of comments and interest in this. You've handled so many different questions from them. I know they appreciate it. We appreciate having you on, Doctor.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Dr. Heidi Connolly is the chief of the Division of Pediatric Sleep Medicine at Golisano Children's Hospital. 8:30 school start times. We'll see. Short break, and we come back with a preview of primary election day next.